We are chatting now with Comptroller Sean Scanlan. And Comptroller, thank you so much for your time, always. There was a report that came out at the beginning of the week projecting quite a deficit, $109 million this year. First of all, talk about these projections. How do we get to these numbers, and what exactly does that mean for Connecticut?
It sounds scary, but there's more to that story. And what that more is that, yes, it's true, we have a $100 million deficit, which is quite small in the context of a very, very large state budget. But what that deficit really is about is the fact that since 2017, we've changed the way we budget, and we've set aside, as I've talked about on your show multiple times, super volatile revenue that comes from Fairfield County and people who live down there but work in the financial services industry. And if you factored that money in, meaning you looked at all of our accounts, we'd actually have a $2 billion surplus. But because we take some of that volatile money and put it towards only building up our rainy day fund, which is full at $4 billion, or paying down pension debt, as we paid down about $10 billion of that in the last couple of years. So it's like a tale of two numbers, and you could look at it very differently. And there was some very scary, ominous headlines over the weekend of, oh my God, we've got a $100 million deficit. But one of the reasons why you think you saw a bipartisan, overwhelming consensus vote on the state budget over the weekend is because it's really almost more of a paper mirage than it is an actual deficit.
Okay, so you know, feel free to tell me that I'm not understanding it. So then is
it confusing?
Okay, great. Perfect. As long as I'm not like totally off my game here. So when you hear that kind of a deficit, you know, what I guess does that exactly mean? So I think you explained it perfectly where it's not a full picture story, and I can understand what you're talking about. But for the person at home that hears that, and we do know we went outside the fiscal guardrails for this budget, what does that mean for them?
Well, but that's the point, right? Which is that it seems to be a bipartisan consensus that perhaps the guardrails in their current form are not the right way for us to budget. There were people in my party for years that were saying that, but now the Republicans seem to have joined into that agreement. Not all of them, but most of both caucuses voted for this bill. And what I think that means is that they no longer believe that we are needing to capture as much of that volatile, again, Fairfield County revenue as we had been in the last couple of years. That gets into a very, very wonky detail, which I'll try to explain as easily as possible, which is basically that when they went to calculate how much of that Wall Street financial services money we should set aside, they made a mistake in my mind, which is that they based that on 1 year instead of a few years average. And I have long, for example, argued that we should switch to a multi-year average. And I think the fact that you're now seeing the governor, the Republicans, the Democrats, all sort of agreeing that we're capturing too much money, I think the solution that I've long pointed to of putting a 3 to 5 year average in there can solve the problem, because what they did this year is they basically took a lot of that, not a lot of that, a good amount, several hundred million dollars worth of volatile revenue, and they used it to balance the budget. If we were to change the average, we could take some of that money to balance the budget to meet what they're trying to do, but still put a lot aside to either build up that rainy day fund or pay down the pension debt.
Gotcha. So you're not, to put words in your mouth, Comptroller, but you're not concerned with a $109 million deficit.
I'm not concerned because I think we still have ample ways to address that, and we will as soon as the fiscal year is over, if that even holds to the end of the fiscal year. So, for example, about $40 million of that is something that they've already come to a solution on when it comes to retiree health care. The other 60 are things that I think may get less, or we may see changes to that. A lot of the change why we're seeing a little bit of a deficit is because of the corporate tax. The corporate tax is not performing the way it was projected to, not because corporations are leaving Connecticut or there's big problems there, but because the One Big Beautiful Bill Act passed by Congress and signed by the president changed the way that corporations can file their taxes at the state level. And as a result, we've seen less money. So again, I think there's different explanations for different pieces of this. This is really hard to talk about in a short radio interview without confusing the heck out of people. But I think what I would say is I still feel like Connecticut's finances are in very good shape. We've got some challenges. We've also got opportunities, and I'm doing my best to try to explain to people this crazy paradoxical situation in which we could both have a $100 million deficit, but surging money going towards our rainy day fund and savings accounts.
Yeah, it is an interesting perspective, certainly. We've got Comptroller Sean Scanlon here, and it is complicated, so I appreciate you breaking it down as best as possible. In the past, Comptroller, when we've talked about fiscal guardrails, and not even bringing politics into it, but, you know, you are the fiscal watchdog for our state, and it's something that you've said, you know, yeah, we can't go too outside of our fiscal guardrails. How did you feel about the budget that did pass in the Senate and the House?
How I feel about it is that I want to get a game plan together. I understand why the governor and the legislature, and again, to be clear, both parties in the legislature came to the decision that they came to and voted on that budget. But what I want to see is us to get consensus around getting back to a version of the guardrails. But I acknowledge that the version we have now is probably not the version we need anymore, because that version was created in a crisis 8 years ago. And Connecticut is just in a fundamentally different place than it was at that time. So what I would like to do is what I love to do as a comptroller and as a politician, which is just try to bring people together that have different viewpoints, get them around a table, find some consensus, and then have that be the new consensus that we agree to going forward. I don't think it's a good idea for us to just kind of keep doing what we did this year going forward in perpetuity, which is just kind of like taking as much as we need and then going from there. I think we have to have a game plan. I think the guardrails have worked to get us out of this crisis. I think the guardrails are needed for us to keep going in a fiscally better direction. But I think we need to solidify what that is. And that's what I'm going to try to work on for the next 6 months before the session comes back again in January.
We're chatting with Comptroller Sean Scanlon. And just before the break, we were discussing his reaction to the state budget. As we reported, there was bipartisan support for the budget. The governor, who negotiated it with legislative leaders on both sides of the aisle, is expected to sign it. And just before the break, Comptroller Sean Scanlon talking about how we need to look at, yes, we could spend the money that we did, but knowing this was a quick fix and not a long-term solution.
One of the things that I think I'm worried about, quite frankly, is that we, yes, are investing money back into schools and to try to help with, after the revals, property taxes at the local level are people are struggling. And I get it. And I listen, as a taxpayer myself, I'm grateful. But with that being said, you know, one of the things that, granted, the budget was the most important thing for this session, but one of the things that I thought was really vocalized by local leaders and educators and, you know, municipal leaders was needing to adjust the ECS formula. And to me, you know, that hasn't really been touched since 2013. And I feel like this was kind of a Band-Aid on a situation that needs to be surgically looked at. Because,
for sure.
I mean, it just reminds me of what we went through with COVID, where we got this money and yay, okay, we'll get through another year or two. But then the money runs out and the school budgets get cut, people lose their jobs, and we're kind of back to square one.
Yeah, look, I totally understand why everyone wanted to make ECS money the priority this year, and they certainly found that. But why I'm working on property tax reform statewide, which is, I think, the single biggest issue we have got to tackle as a state, but everyone is afraid to because they A, think it's impossible, or B, think it's politically toxic, is because we will just continue to have to do what they're doing this year of just sending more and more money to our municipalities, having the tax base of each municipality being stressed out and stressed out and stressed out by this never-ending doom loop of begging hard for money And when that money doesn't come in enough to meet the needs of your town, you just jack up the property tax on an already stressed population. So I have been trying to do what I just said I want to do on the guardrails for this issue. I've got a group of 14 Democrats and 14 Republicans who are mayors and first selectmen that I've been meeting with since last year to try to find consensus. And just 2 weeks ago, we announced something that I'm really excited about, which is the Citizens Assembly, that some of your listeners may have gotten a letter in the mail and said, what the heck is this? It's an invitation to participate in the first ever statewide Citizens Assembly in the history of our state and the United States, frankly, which is we're trying to find 100 regular people, average ordinary citizens from across Connecticut, who can sit in a room with me, CCM, which is the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, and some folks from Yale and UConn, and learn about the property tax and then come up with some citizen-driven solutions to this problem. And I think the end goal is for me to take what they come up with and what these mayors come up with, give it to the legislature in 2027 and say, guys, there's a different way than just sending more money in ECS. Let's actually solve the problem.
How do you make sure that you're hearing from all corners of Connecticut? Because a Fairfield County is going to sound different than a Litchfield County, than a Hartford County, so on and so forth.
Yeah, so we sent this letter out to 200,000 people across the state. And it was done with a formula that was intended to find a representative group of people, to your point. We expect about a 1% response rate, which sounds horrible, but when you think about it, it's not terrible in these, you know, very difficult times of reaching people and getting people's attention on stuff. And then from that 2,000 ideal universe, we pare it back to make sure that we're not missing anybody and we're represented equally for gender and occupation and geography and political affiliation, right? So that when we get in that room in July, that room looks like Connecticut and is Connecticut.
So again, those letters I know have already gone out. And in a matter of, I would say, by the fall, you guys might have at least a lot of conversations under your belt. I mean, do you feel like you ideally could come to the table in January of 2027 when the new session starts and bring concrete solutions?
I hope so, but to be honest, Melissa, I have no clue how it's going to go, right? And that excites me, to be honest. A lot of people have said to me, I cannot believe you're agreeing to do this. What if it fails? This is going to be a complete, you know, disaster. I'm cool with it failing because I think the bigger failure is for us to just keep kicking the can and do nothing. And I just think this is a genuinely different approach to it. Every 5-10 years, some politician comes around and says, I'm going to solve the property tax. They put together a task force. There's like a blue ribbon commission, and that report just collects dust on the shelf.
Agreed.
And I've studied every one of them. And I think the common denominator of why they have all failed is because they try to hit grand slams and home runs. And everyone greets those reports as, hey, maybe this is the right solution or 5 solutions, but this is too crazy, too complex, too big. It's never going to happen. So I hope that we can try to hit some singles and doubles. And I think if we can hit some singles and doubles that are inspired by average people, not politicians, I think politicians will look at them quite differently than if it was just created by a group of wonky academics that have no understanding of politics. And I think the more we look at real people for inspiration in politics, it sounds crazy that that's not what we do often, but I think the more we do that in politics, the better the policy is, and the more courage politicians have to actually do what they probably in their heart know is right, but they think is politically complicated.
Yeah. Comptroller Sean Scanlon, I want to thank you so much for giving us the time on WICC. I really do appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right. And again, we also had more of a conversation around this new initiative that the comptroller was talking about. We did a full breakdown of it last week on the show with Joe DeLong of CCM. So you can go back, listen to that. As he mentioned, those letters went out in the mail last week. I didn't get one. I don't know if you did. Let me know if you did. And if you decide to do it, I want some insight. I want to know what goes on in those meetings. Again, they haven't even finalized who's going to do it. But again, my big concern, even what the comptroller is saying there, and I'm just going to be totally blunt, You know, I do know the comptroller in the past has admitted he wants to run for governor. He was debating it even last year, but said if Ned Lamont is running, I'm good. Like, I like his leadership. I'm not going to run. I mean, I think he is continuing to prove that he would like to eventually hold that office. And look, if comptroller Sean Scanlon can crack the code as to why our property taxes are so high, kudos to him. I mean, honestly, that is something that we should not care about partisan. We should just care about lowering the cost of living in Connecticut. So listen, if he can figure it out, cool, more power to him. I think, you know, as much as he would like to say that this is going to be a quicker turnaround than the blue ribbon committee, sure, that's true. And I can't stand blue ribbon committees. I'm sorry. I know the concept is great, but you just don't see anything happen in a fast amount of time. And we really had an opportunity. We had money we could have used, and we had ways we could have, you know, started to, I think, make headway for Connecticut residents this session. And like I said, I don't think anyone is complaining per se that people are getting the money that they need for education in their cities and towns. But I'm always a look ahead kind of a person. And if you look at how history worked just 5 years ago during COVID, we ran out of that money and people had to see cuts. People lost jobs. People saw budget cuts. People saw education cuts. And that is going to happen again. Because this budget, and this is not me from a partisan standpoint, this is just from a logical standpoint, we did some quick fixes. And the comptroller even doubled down and said, yeah, you're right. I know I am. Well, all we did was slap a Band-Aid on something that needs to be surgically done. And so here we are. I am hopeful. I would love to see something great come out of this group that's being formed over the summertime. And maybe if it is coming from a direct group of residents in Connecticut, hey, this is what we need, and everybody kind of collectively is on the same page, maybe we do see that politics don't need to play a part in it, and this is just, hey, this is of Connecticut human interest, and that's what we should do. The fact is we now have to wait another session for something concrete to be done. That's what the comptroller admitted there. So I guess we'll wait and see, but I think Connecticut residents on average are kind of sick of waiting and seeing.